This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
The moment of shock is just unforgettable.
From CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's Baby, available now.
Kumasi, Kumasi. It's nice to be back. The last time I was here was for one of my best friend's grandma who passed away. And this was my intro to big funerals in Ghana. I'm trying to find my fixer here in Kumasi, and my kind driver is helping with the directions.
Hey,
it's very nice to be here with you again, Ludwig. What is your whole perception of funerals in Ghana?
The first funeral I attended was my grandfather's funeral. You know, they dressed him, he was sitting down. I mean, you know, the person is dead, but assuming the posture of someone alive.
What?
Yeah.
A deceased person sat on a chair.
He was sitting with a African, the kente cloth, wearing jewelries, beautiful regalia on him. So that was how the first funeral I witnessed was for me, and I love it, actually.
We're going to talk about that. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Hannah Ajala, and this is Flamboyant Funerals. Any weekend in Ghana, wherever you are, there's a fair chance you'll stumble across a funeral, but they're a far cry from the ones I'm used to. Ghana has a reputation for staging some of the most eccentric and flamboyant funerals in the world. Fantasy coffins in the shape of a pineapple, or a lion, or why not a Lamborghini? Billboards advertising funeral arrangements alongside the latest Afrobeats concert, and a budget that can surpass that of a wedding. They can take months, even years, to plan. But they're also full of ancient tradition. I'm told that from dawn to dusk, there's the most elaborate ritual laden with meaning. I've been invited to the funeral of the late Georgina Boabeng by her son, Stephen.
In Ghana, we look at funerals as a great send-off. We don't believe in cessation of life. They have to prepare you for the afterlife. We get you your favorite clothes, your gadgets, your jewelry. Funeral is the only place that you can go and the bank will give you a loan without question. That is why in Ghana, you get a loan easily. We love funerals.
Stephen and his brothers are putting the finishing touches to a huge marquee in a park in central Kumasi for their mum's funeral tomorrow. White drapes separate the spaces. The scent of chrysanthemums and roses fills the air. There are chandeliers and candles and verses of scripture projected onto the walls.
It's good for us to mourn. She's touched so many lives.
Thank you, Stephen. Honestly, yeah, I just really appreciate you taking the time out. You have this, like, a scarf, a sewn scarf, and it's a picture of your beautiful mother, Mrs. Georgina Boabeng, a.k.a. Mama G, 64 years, in loving memory.
When it happened, we said we are going to give our mom the best funeral ever. We're just waiting for the day.
In that early morning, there is something both eerie and spectacular about that time. And in Ghana, each new day is welcomed by the sound of cockerels, of sweeping of verandas and courtyards.
Gus Casely-Hayford, a museum director with strong roots in Ghana, has a keen interest in Ghanaian funerals. I recognize what Gus is describing about those early mornings, given my Nigerian background. But considering the proximity of our two countries, I'm amazed at how different their end-of-life celebrations are.
The family begin to gather at dawn, and they know that they are in then for a long day.
And mourning just looks so different when you're Ghanaian.
Yes. I was born in London, and so my understanding of what funerals might be is actually framed through a very British view, and that is that funerals are times in which you are quiet, solemn, put on your best suit, you show due respect by doing things in an impeccable order, but usually kind of showing a level of constraint, even though you may well be very emotional. It's about more about holding things in. And then I went to my very first Ghanaian funeral, and that was instead an opportunity for release, a space of catharsis, a space of really, really avid emotional expression. It's like through the mourning that people create a presence that you can feel.
I'm still up, so there's no sleep. Everybody comes wailing in agony. Everybody is given the opportunity to come and see her one last time.
Even at this point in the day, when the mood is at its most somber, the drama of a Ghanaian funeral is evident. Ghanaian composer Fred Onavuor Asoke now lives in the US, but grew up in Kumasi.
Early in the morning, as in 2-3 o'clock, there are elaborate rituals. You know, some of those rituals are performed in privacy. And these are rituals where a medicine man or a medicine woman, a very, very skilled diviner, in the twinkle of an eye, the priest or priestess, I mean, changes before your very eyes. They're talking in a different voice, different from their own. And of course, that's the voice of an ancestral spirit. In other words, you acknowledge the spirit world, calling the name of these ancestors. The spirit world is really, really important to our people.
This is the heart of the ancient Ashanti Kingdom. There's probably no better place in Ghana to experience the flamboyance of this country's funerals than in Kumasi, the cultural capital. Stephen and his family belong to the Asafo tribe that traces its roots back to the Mali Empire. As the night goes on, the Ashanti chiefs come to pay their respects.
This is a city of royals and the city of traditions. There are a lot of chiefs around. It's one of their own they've lost. So that's why they come in their full regalia to come and give honor. So that's why you see all the gold, the ornaments and everything, because it's one of their own.
By dawn, this extraordinary night is coming to an end. And this being Ghana, it's high time for sustenance. Koko, a millet porridge, is served in large bowls. And more people gather, Georgina's friends and relatives from across Ghana to the UK and beyond.
In the morning, you'll have her last mass here on earth before she goes to eternity.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth.
I can't describe Georgina. She was my best friend, she was my best sister. She took care of me when I lost my husband, and I will ever be grateful. Georgina, rest in perfect peace.
Our mom, she has been properly sent off to a better place. Let's smile. Let's be hopeful, because our mom would have done the same.
The choreography of Ghanaian funerals is palpable. And the flamboyance is about to take on a very different character.
Oh yeah, I can see the MC giving his announcements proudly. There are other funerals happening on the same grounds. So much black, so much red.
Right now it's about party. It's all about the joy. You are singing, you are dancing, you are cheering. Remember, it's because of Georgina that we are celebrating. Yeah.
One of the things that's most striking about a Ghanaian funeral is the dress. Most famously, the Adinkra cloth with its traditional ink prints, symbols of peace or humility or love, and much else besides. African dress guru Gus Casely-Hayford says the fabrics on show at a Ghanaian funeral are inextricably linked with history and place.
You'll go to one of these funerals and you'll see the senior people, the great women, because many of these families are matrilineal, so the women are hugely powerful. And you see them in these absolutely gorgeous fabrics, layered and folded and just worn with a kind of architectural, exquisite precision that is glorious. And then they walk with them in ways that, you know, I think Naomi Campbell would envy. And then the men, dressed impeccably, dressed in glorious cloth. Sometimes they can be incredibly old, passed down over generations, truly loved.
And that comes with colours. That's one thing that's always struck me, the colours.
Yeah.
The red, the black, the white.
For most people, it is the black, which is about the infinity of life and death, the darkness of loss. But then it's contrasted with the red, which is connected to lineage and blood and life. And when you see them together, they make a really powerful but somehow simultaneously uplifting combination.
The mourning period is so warming,
yes.
Knowing that you don't have to be alone.
Yeah. It comes at a time in which people will also engage in telling wonderful stories about the person who's gone. Stories that uplift and make you laugh and make you just feel so privileged to be part of these families.
You see, the fufu one, this is how it started. Every Sunday growing up, oh, she makes the local fufu.
If you don't eat fufu, you get a jollof rice.
Fried yam.
That's making me hungry. And it's filling as well.
No matter what state you are in, we don't forget about our food and drinks.
The OB does the ultrasound, and I'm looking at the monitor, and there's no baby.
This is the story of a young woman who faked pregnancy again and again.
Story after story after story.
Targeting birth workers with a web of lies.
That this was a pregnancy via assault.
She was going through a stillbirth at 24 weeks.
From CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's Baby. Available now.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. By mid-afternoon, after the fufu and jollof rice, it's time for speeches, tributes and eulogies, and offerings to the family. All of this is overseen by the chiefs with their ceremonial attire, keeping a careful eye over proceedings, and never forgetting the profound importance of the occasion. I met Chief Obapanin Ajewa and her interpreter, Nana.
Yeah, Ashanti. Yeah, traditional adi, ASA.
What she's saying right now is that in the Ashanti kingdom, the death of her sister was not supposed to die. If all things being equal, her sister was not supposed to die this young. So she's saying that for them and for their clan, it is important that we've taken it very seriously and we want to honor her.
I was struck by how strongly my young interpreter, also a member of the Asafo tribe, felt about these ancient traditions and how much they seem to be an accepted part of day-to-day life. Why is it important that we keep these traditions going?
So she was saying that from the time past, we are fighters because of the Ashanti king, the Otumfo. So what she's saying is that for her clan, the Asafo, they are warriors. They are known as Kotoko. Yes. Yeah, so he's a warrior. So the entire Ashanti kingdom, they are seen as warriors. So as he's a warrior, we are all also warriors. She's saying that we have battled a lot. We have gone through so much war and everything. So they need to invoke the gods on what to do for direction. So then she's saying that that's why tradition is very important.
Composer Fred Onovuor Osoke, known as Fredo, has studied the trend of close association with ancient ritual and has looked in particular at the continuing importance of chants, the chants that are still performed with great gusto by the town crier when someone dies, chants with religious or Christian overtones, and more modern ones too.
Of course, wherever there are rituals, there are songs. Like in the Ashanti, in the Kasi region, people are chanting from all different parts of the community. So Avlesi chant or Domeshibe. Domeshibe essentially means at the market. It goes like this. Oyo me lakpe o. Oyo me to. Oyo me lakpe o, lakpe o. Oyo me to. And this particular chant actually mentions the name of the deceased. Avlesi gande be ya yibo me yabo. Avlesi gande. So just imagine a huge group just chanting that beat. Avlesi gande be ya yibo all over the marketplace.
Fredo says the surprising comeback of chants may suggest there's something valuable about preserving the moral lessons of previous generations. Lessons, he reckons, feel perfectly at home in contemporary Ghana.
Avlesi, according to this folklore, was one of their benefactors. But he was never valued. His value became apparent after he was gone, you know. So this folklore usually is shared to remind people that always celebrate your elders while they're still here. Always celebrate your benefactors while they're still here with us. We shouldn't wait until they're all gone before we realize, you know, how impactful they have been in our community, in our lives.
The party is even spilling out onto the street. Family and friends and colleagues have flown in from all over the world to be here. Honestly, I can't stop smiling. It's so beautiful. You could be mistaken for thinking it's a club night in downtown Kumasi. DJ decks mixed with traditional drums, some of them enormous, the famous Ghanaian talking drums. But Gus Casely-Hayford says in this heady cocktail of drums and dancing, like with so much at Ghanaian funerals, there's a deeper meaning, not obvious to a casual observer, but totally familiar to Ghanaians.
The sophistication of the modes of communication in Ghana is mind-boggling. You see someone dancing, and every foot movement, the hand movements, of course, they are artistic, and within each one of those hand movements, they have whole kind of, they have a whole heritage behind them. With every movement, there is meaning. Communicating things about sometimes the way in which the person may have passed, something of their life, something of their hopes for the future. And then, of course, it's the drumming. These are tonal languages. And so it's not just about rhythm, but in the way in which the tones are actually made upon the surface of a drum. It actually is a language which is loaded into every drum beat.
Stephen, you've had a very eventful 24 hours.
It's a very tough one to take because we never expected Mom to go so quick. I decided to go all out. My mom has done great things for me, and we spent close to £65,000 for this funeral.
Oh my gosh.
Between me and my brothers.
I'm really amazed at that amount. I really am.
I'm happy. Every penny is worth it because people loved it. Everybody is loving it. It's part of our culture. And because it's something that is so personal to us.
So many of the guests at the funeral talked about how much Georgina herself loved a good party and a good funeral, that I've no doubt at all she would consider it money well spent. But there are voices in Ghana who aren't entirely convinced about an increasing commercialization of funerals, however wonderful and sensitive and joyous these occasions are.
I'm Bishop Ebenezer Budai. I've conducted so many funeral services. I've buried so many people. But we have some that are just blowing everything out of the roof.
Bishop Odai says he has nothing against families like Georgina's remembering their loved ones exactly as they see fit. But he says there are cases of these flamboyant funerals where extravagance threatens the very purpose of the occasion.
So some people now have become professional mourners who are hired to come mourn, and they are paid to mourn. They don't even need to know the person who died. All they need to just tell us the name. We can use the name to mourn. Oh, Kwesi, oh, Valerie, why are you dead? Oh, God. You know, that kind of thing. They cry for you and you pay them to make the funeral look like a funeral.
It's almost like a wedding vendor because I recently got married and we had our list of vendors. So imagine preparing for a funeral and you have to put in your spreadsheet, okay, criers.
So I don't know where they got an idea from that the crying must be a lot.
And these funerals, well, the flamboyant ones, are not cheap. It costs thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, that some have taken it overboard, when now it become just fanfare, partying, and some have even become a show, you know, where you want to outdo the other family and make sure your funeral is bigger and your funeral is more, you know, more elaborate, if you like. Even the cost of a casket can be mind-blowing for one family. Each vendor tries to distinguish themselves and add something that will make them stand out and give them, let me say, a competitive advantage. But then it has spread, expanded. The real considerations of the funeral sometimes are lost because of the excesses.
Bishop Odai says he wants to ensure that what makes Ghanaian funerals so unique isn't put at risk. Here in Kumasi, I look on as multiple generations chat and laugh and dance together. Gus Casely-Hayford.
So often in the West, we can go through funerals that feel almost functional, too functional, that don't allow a sense of letting go, a sense of having the time to pay tribute and pay one's respects and to do that together. And in that way, what a Ghanaian funeral is about and what that whole day allows is this moment of culmination in which you begin to say,
this is the end of that process of formal mourning and the moving into something that feels like a sort of return to normal life. It's a process that I have come to enormously value. For me, when I attend a Ghanaian funeral, it's not about the body that is placed in the coffin and then in the ground. It's about the community and the memory of the person that is left behind and the way in which Ghanaians continue to celebrate both the continuity and the person themselves.
Yep. Just a few minutes to 6 o'clock. The sun is slowly setting and that is it.
I bump into a young man called Samson who tells me that he met Georgina when he moved to Kumasi to go to university and needed somewhere to live. He became virtually one of the family.
She enjoyed herself. Ma was the life of the party. And she loved God, she loved people. So for someone like that, I don't think there's anything too much for her. I'm just picturing her in heaven now, just looking and laughing and having a good time. I mean, I remember telling Ma, you go to too many funerals. And then this week she's wearing black, next week she's wearing black and white. I'm like, which one are you going today? Oh, my uncle's somebody, somebody. My niece's somebody, somebody. She's always going. You know, from the learning stage to the church service was packed out with people.
Yes.
You know, and then here again at the actual, you know, reception, it's the love she's poured out to so many people and we're all pouring it back to her.
Ah, what a day. You know, being there with you, your family, loved ones. I genuinely feel like I knew your mum.
She's a great person. Everything is all right.
So much colour, so much music. Ghana, a place that I really love to go to and still just blows my mind.
You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service with me, Hannah Ajala. The producer was Adele Armstrong.
The OB does the ultrasound, and I'm looking at the monitor, and there's no baby.
This is the story of a young woman who faked pregnancy again and again.
Story after story after story.
Targeting birth workers with a web of lies.
That this was a pregnancy via assault.
She was going through a stillbirth at 24 weeks.
From CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's Baby, available now.